The latest Transformer news, reviews, and more, visit tformers.com. You're watching Radio Free Cybertron with your hosts, Brian Kilby, J.D. Church, Rob Springer, John DeLuna, Lady Rick, Bweebum, featuring XV.
So we're actually not featuring XV this week. This is Radio Free Cybertron.
I'm still
the original Transformers
Internet
show.
XV.
We were suffering Skype issues, and I just threw a bottle of aspirin at my cat. So, professionalism
at its best.
I've heard of that.
Where is it?
So my cat started jumping on my toys during the intro. So the closest thing I had is a bottle of aspirin. So that was great. I'm an awful owner of a pet. Hey, so yeah, this is Radio Free Cybertron, the original Transformers Internet radio show. One of the world's first podcasts. Yes, I believe it. I believe it.
Actually, given that I've never heard of an older one, I'm just prepared to call you the original podcast of all time.
I found one guy who claimed that his podcast came first, so I'm
I bet we could take him.
Yeah, he actually stopped doing it.
We have more people. We just, all show up. Hey,
he actually started doing it like a year before us and stopped doing it like 6 months before we started. So this is National Podcast Post Month. And if you are a fan of Radio Free Cybertron and our podcast on Facebook specifically, or if you go to tfradio.net, you'll see each day this month, which is November 2011. We'll be posting a podcast. Most of them will be podcasts that we already post, things like, RFC, New Sound Wave, Superhero Time, Fanboy Versus, and the like. But we're also posting all sorts of different ideas that we've had sort of, simmering on the back burner for a while that we wanted to do but couldn't get around to. Things like our wrestling podcast or our retro gaming podcast. We might even pull out that Star Trek podcast we've been talking about for so long. So, again, November, National Podcast Post Month. If you have suggestions, shoot us an email, contact@tfradio.net. If you actually want to submit something, we might post it. I can't promise that, but we may. So
I guess the show is not on the air right now, but I still was a fan of doing the Tardcast.
Yeah, I would be all for that. I love
that name.
Yeah, I love the name. In fact, most of our good names you came up with. Congratulations.
Yeah pretty much.
Yes. So Amy only has like an hour, and our topic is specifically tailored for her, so let's get into the news. Okay.
Awesome.
So, color test photos.
I did not expect this.
First.
Yes, color test photos of Nazi spray online. So, third-party group iGear has released new images of their upcoming Mini Warrior series.
You can tell it's not sea spray because it actually looks like sea spray.
Because it looks exactly like sea spray.
As opposed to actual sea spray, which looks vaguely like sea spray.
Yeah, that's a darn good point, actually. Let me actually pull it up. I have only bought one of these third-party toys, but I am definitely picking this one up because I love sea spray, and it actually looks pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, they did a really good job with the pictures because, I have to say, that kind of does look like an ocean bed that he's, floating on, right?
Now that I have video, I'm feeling judgmental, and I really want to know what Peter's chair thinks of this.
He's not talking.
Yeah.
His chair is available.
Number two, what is your opinion?
Yeah, so it's really cool. What I really like about it, the fact that they pretty much capture sea spray. Most of the time, these third-party toys just kind of miss the point. And God, Peter is not there, is he?
No, but he isn't.
They kind of miss the point. It's like, the worst offenders, and I mentioned this before, are the, the Insecticons. Those, bestial warrior Insecticons that came out. They look awful. The best being Hercules. But it's $600.
Yeah. He's rent.
You've bought all of the Optimus Prime third party figures, haven't you, Ender?
And their brother. Yeah.
We talked about that last week. Which one was your favorite?
My favorite third party one?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. There's been a lot lately. I was disappointed in how it came out, but I was a big fan, at least, of the idea of the Rolling Thunder version of him. I really liked the locomotive one; was quite nice. There was the Headmaster one recently; that was really cool. There's actually been a ton of them just in the last year or two.
You ever feel dirty buying them because you know that they're just like terrible knockoffs? Or do you consider them like art?
I'm sorry. Does some other company besides Hasbro get to rip me off sideways for plastic crack? Oh, cry me to sleep. I don't know. I don't care. I'm not really bothered by that. Are they really stealing? I mean, like, if Hasbro was going to make that and they're going to lose money, I suppose I could feel bad about that. And I think that's really what Hasbro has always been saying they would go after. And they really haven't bothered to do that, is when someone takes something that is actually definitely theirs, that they might have wanted to do someday, and makes a knockoff of it. They don't even bother to go after that often, to my knowledge.
Yeah, Hasbro but hasn't. Takara has.
Yeah, when somebody takes... Well, okay, that I didn't know about. But when someone takes something from the property that people want, in some degree, maybe not to a degree that Hasbro recognizes, or maybe just that they don't know about, I think Hasbro looks at it and goes like, well, we weren't going to do that anyway.
It's kind of like what we do. I mean, Hasbro could come after us for doing a Transformers podcast, because they're not. But if they started doing a Transformers podcast, we might have to back off.
Yeah, we do a Transformers podcast, you know, now featuring a guy who does very little but call them idiots.
You know? yeah.
The stuff, you're dumbasses. Have a nice day.
No, I've really mellowed on the third-party thing. Again, exactly for your point, Hasbro hasn't really said anything about it. Now, several months ago, Takara basically equated it to stealing, and Takara doesn't like these. But Hasbro, like, has a really, like, mellow, nonchalant, you know, attitude toward it. So I'm fine with them, especially if they're cool, like Seaspray here.
They're in danger on two fronts on this, too, because, for one thing, a lot of the looks of these toys, because of their proliferation and how they keep changing them, has become kind of like ubiquitous in terms of, like, think of just like Optimus Prime's head, right? It's a robot head. It looks like a Gundam head. It looks like this other head. It looks like a whole bunch of other things. And all these things, you know, it's very slight changes. I think it's very hard. I mean, like, to us, to fans, we look at it and go like, well, of course that's Seaspray. What are you, an idiot?
Yeah.
But to somebody who was uninitiated, it's like, well, yeah, it looks kind of like this 20-year-old toy that's been through three toy companies. Does that mean it's definitely a knockoff of it? And, you know, I think, you know, they'd have to parade in, like, you know, three versions of the toy and, like, you know, have to show them whatever that Seaspray episode where he changed bodies. And, oh, you know what I mean? Like, you know, some judge is going to sit through a couple of Seaspray episodes from 1985 to determine that this design is definitely theirs. And the other problem is because so many of these have gone forward, to my understanding, the letter of the law states that to maintain your intellectual property, you have to vigorously defend it.
And I think you're right.
Because they have not done that very often, I think they would have a really hard time coming out now and saying, hey, you can't do that, because there's a very good chance a court could say, well, but you've been saying effectively that it was okay for like two decades by not doing anything about it.
Yeah, it's like that kind of looks like a character that showed up in a cartoon that we paid to have produced back in the 1980s.
It's like, so what? And then that's just the other question, is how much, I mean, this one looks, you know, very much like the actual toy due to size, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
But he does look more like he looked in the cartoon than he looked as a toy. So, I mean, I think it'd be harder than some people might think. And I think, frankly, I think, like, Hasbro is just like, what do we care?
Yeah. We're Hasbro, for God's sakes.
What Hasbro has proven consistently as well is that if they turn around in 10 minutes and decide, you know what, we want to produce our own one of these that's comparable, that it will sell just fine.
Yeah. I mean, the number of people...
will not affect their bottom line.
It's not
at
all.
They're nothing but a chance to piss us off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why bother?
Yeah, I agree. I agree fully. Let's see here. Thanks to Starbaby, which is a pretty awesome screen name, of HKTF Forums.
You have to talk about your standards of awesome.
Well, my standards of awesome are pretty low these days. So, thanks to this person, some new images of the Transformers Prime Wave 1 Deluxe class figures Starscream and RC. So this is actually how these toys are going to look once they ship. So I've got them up on video, people watching. They look really freaking nice. Why can't the others, like that Prime that came out, why can't it be as nice as these?
I'm watching. I can't see it.
Yeah, they're not too bad.
I love RC. I mean, I'm a big fan of sort of the design for RC anyway. And they've really done
Much
a good job
capturing.
Much better
than the movie aesthetic because, yeah, the movie aesthetic was crap. Sorry to say. I do not like it.
Yeah, I really
don't think they're better than the movie aesthetic because it's the movie aesthetic. The word aesthetic is nicer than the movie aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's really too nice to be applied.
The only thing that I have to say is, like, Starscream, his hips, he's bent his backbone or something. It looks a little funny to me. That's all.
Let me find a good picture of that to show. Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, whereas it looks like, I don't know, it's weird.
He looks like he's
That's
like
the only thing
he looks
about
like he's
that I'm
posing
like,
for Playgirl or something. Honestly, so yeah.
That's Pretty the thing much. About ball jointed legs.
So Peter's chair. What do you think?
End of line.
Yeah.
End of line.
Hey John, are you on? I can't get. Are you there, John?
Yeah, I'm being social in the chat room.
Gotcha. Yeah, John is our social guru. Your video's not up, so I can't tell. So
I'm listening.
Skype is being such a pain today. It pushed Peter out of his chair. So
yeah, it knocked him over.
Yeah,
how
so
about that? Physically attacked him.
People who are not watching live, we had to start like 10 minutes late, so we're gonna have to compress the show because Skype. So Skype's being a jerk this evening. I think they do it on Wednesdays intentionally.
And
just
that's
so
the show.
Us. Yes.
Roll credit.
Yes, roll credit. So thanks to the Transformers Galaxy Hong Kong fans group who've posted lots of in-hand images of Prime Deluxe Class Cliff Jumper out of their Facebook page. You can get a look of how it actually looks once it ships. And let me pull that
Thank
up.
Thank you for your, once yes, again, confirming how little I want this toy.
Man, you know, except for the fact that it's Cliff Jumper from, you know, Prime, who is awesome. The toy itself, not so much.
Meh.
I hated Cliff Jumper's brief appearance in Prime. I found him really annoying and would, like, thank Starscream in person for offing him. As a toy, it only points out what was harder to see because he was only on screen for 45 seconds in the show, which is that he is the, you know, the Transformer who he needed to be distinct for the show because he had some, you know, part that was going to be important. But he was only going to be in one episode, so they gave him to the intern to make. And the intern, apparently not being a total dumbass, realized he didn't want to spend his entire weekend on it. So the entire chest is just this flat little board of nothing. And that's why he looks like crap.
Well, it does look like crap. It actually looks like a pack-in toy from a box of cereal.
Well, and but is, you know, thinking of it from a design, like you're making an animated CGI character, do you see the tremendous time-saving versus every other character in the show that that chest represents?
Yeah. I mean, the number of polygons in it are limited. You throw a texture map over it, and you're done.
Yeah,
it's all texture map. So,
and all the transformation animations are like dead simple because all you got to do is like fold that over like what ostensibly should be more complicated.
It's not as simple though as Beast Machines was when it was just a flash of light. And I am transformed. So
yeah, well that's true.
Yeah, I love Beast Machines.
Outright cheating aside.
Okay, let's see here. But yeah, I really don't want that toy. I love Cliff Jumper, but I just could care less. He looks like crap.
I'm a big fan of more standard versions of Cliff Jumper. I don't want to go. I mean, like, what else is there besides G1, I suppose? But I mean, like, I would animated. Yeah, animated Cliff Jumper is fine too. It's kind of one of these things. Where, like, I think someone said one week, like, it's an actual Cliff Jumper that isn't based on Bumblebee. It's like, and it proves why that should never happen ever again. Because
it's hard to argue with that logic.
It's like, wow. Wow.
Well, actually, it's hard to argue with that logic, but if you look at the movie Cliff Jumper, it's hard to argue that he should
there's
be based
a movie
on Bumblebee.
Cliff Jumper?
I didn't even think there was a movie Cliff Jumper.
Yeah, the Is toy. There? Yeah, there was a toy released.
Oh,
it was
okay.
It was released at least four.
There's no fiction.
Was it again? Was it just a recolor?
Just recolor.
There's no fiction in the movie. It's
the movie. Well, I'm not going to comment on that. That's a debate for like you could you could, you know, talk about that, argue that for the rest of your life.
What do you think Peter's chair thinks about that?
Yeah, Peter's chair. What do you think about that?
I am fairly
Peter's chair. Oh my gosh.
The chair has been replaced.
Chair agrees with me.
Probably.
Is that what's been going on? My chair has been agreeing with everyone.
No. Just in
no comment.
No, I was made. I said now that I'm now that I have a camera, I'm feeling judgmental instead of making fun of your empty chair.
Yeah, my chair turned its back on you.
Yeah. Now that it's Ender in Bite Me Vision.
Bite Me Vision. I can make a graphic. Bite Me Vision. Okay. So, last bit of news. More Transformers Prime toy news. We actually got pictures of what the Takara Tomy version of the Transformers Prime first edition line will look like. Let me pull this up. I'll do this a little rough.
Is Cliffjumper looking better?
Cliffjumper. Yeah. But here's RC. Her color scheme is a little bit different. Let me pull that up on the second monitor. She's less blue or purple. It's kind of neat looking. Another change is... what I think Starscream's a little different. He looks to be more maybe chromed? I can't tell. These are the first pictures we received, so it's hard to tell, but he... Yeah. And the photos themselves aren't that great, but he seems to be less matte colored and maybe shinier plastic, which would make sense because that's exactly what they did with animated. So, and Matt being, you know, not Ender, now Ender's chair, but
now it's Ender's chair. Screw you, Ender, you're Ender's chair.
Yeah. I like that. That's like a banquet chair. That's awesome. Like from a hotel ballroom. It's awesome.
This is great.
Yeah,
we've got words from chairs today.
Yeah, so there's more third-party news, but we'll leave it for another time. For all the news, of course, go to tformers.com and check that out there. Peter, Jack, and company do a great job managing the website and getting the latest, greatest news online. So way to go, Peter. Yay. Okay, so let's jump to comic news. I'll admit, I didn't get a chance to read Ongoing 29. So, Amy, what were your thoughts? Sorry. Gotta do it.
Okay, yeah.
It's now time for comic news with Amy Morgan.
Yay, Ongoing 29 came out.
Yes, it did.
What were your thoughts?
Actually, I'm going to hit the other two pieces of news first so that we can talk, 29 afterwards. Just to let everybody know that Amazon pre-orders are available. We have a How to Draw Transformers Prime by Nick Roach. I'm guessing that this is the one that everybody was trying to get a hold of around AA time, Auto Assembly 2011 time, when he said that he was actually going to have copies of these. I did ask him about it, and he only had a handful of them, and so I did not get a hold of it. And so I'm going, I didn't want it. Anyhow, I had a quick about... two or three people contact me saying that they would also like to get a copy of it. And so, hey, if you didn't, this is, I guess, your way to get that, because it's going to be available on Amazon. And I think the pre-order is also available right now, so you can pre-order.
I'm sure Nick does a lovely job of it, but doesn't it seem like the way to draw Transformers Prime would be don't?
Not.
Because it's a CGI show. But this is how you do this. It has nothing to do with drawing. I'm so sorry.
On the blog... a part of the Eclectic Mix. He has put up a couple images of what he's done, and actually he did a really good job. I was really impressed.
I'm sure he's done a fantastic job of it. I doubt it has very much to do with Transformers Prime, but
yeah, he did a good one. So
tends to lean to the side of like, is this what you meant to do, like this cool thing? That's what you were trying to do, right? Okay, just making sure I got that.
Yep. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, I have, and so I'm like, I'm really excited for it. I want to, any time that Nick Roach gets to share some of the secrets of how he creates awesome stuff, hey, I'm there.
Yeah. It should probably be called How to Draw Something Slightly Cooler Than Transformers Prime.
There could be that too. Hey, you never know.
That could be the sequel.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do a sequel. Classics U.S. Marvel Volume 3. We've gotten the cover. We've gotten the first one, which had Optimus Prime on it. The second one's supposed to have Megatron. The third one's going to have Bumblebee.
Entire contents in like 15 other reprints.
Yes.
But this is great for me because I can't get a hold of those reprints now. So this
go to
is
Ollie's. Cool. They still have several of them for like $3 a pop.
Where?
Ollie's. Why do you think I had so much contest fodder?
Out here?
If you have that much contest fodder, you should send me some.
Okay. I have your address. I need to send stuff out, dude, so yeah. But yeah, so what's in this collection, Amy?
You know, I don't even know because I didn't even pull up the
volume 3, so that would probably place it like late in the late 20s. So that's like the really good stuff. That's like the scraplets, isn't it? Or not the or like Car Wash of Doom. Things like that.
Yeah, I haven't read it, so that's the reason why I'm like, I'd like to get it as soon as I can so I can tell you what's in it. Amazon hasn't given a lot of details on it that I know of. I mean, I can go look it up real quick, but I unfortunately am unprepared.
Yeah, I'm betting Car Wash of Doom makes that one. That's great.
Amazon tends to stop doing research as soon as they've determined the price.
Yeah, they just end up telling. Yeah. Either that or else they reveal things before they're supposed to and they get in trouble. But yeah, Amazon, the pre-order, so you can get both those items on pre-order now. Put them in so that you can get your copy. Hopefully that they will, you know, keep to the dates, which is, I guess, sometime in March, I'm guessing. So, yeah. But we'll see. We'll see, because sometimes they say dates, and then either we get it earlier or we get it later. So, and the last piece of news, of course, is Ongoing 29 has come out. Yeah. It does have an ending.
Yay.
That's
all I can say about it.
What's hysterical is that this is the ending that should have been like when I stopped reading them. This is like what I was looking for then. Like, go after Spike and get off of Earth. And I come back like 2 years later and they're like, okay, we're doing that this week. It's like, what the hell have you been doing?
Oh, God.
And then to top it off, it's done like super like mellow.
You know there's a word for this, right?
Limp?
That's a good
sado,
word.
It's called sadomasochism.
No.
No, the lack of that is why I stopped reading.
Yeah.
Oh. The lack
I was getting them for free and I didn't read them.
Oh.
Punishment
oh,
and pain.
Oh. That. Yeah. Okay. Let's save this for the conversation later on.
I thought I was just going
to
be being an ass and say that I wasn't reading them, even though I was, because I wouldn't be able to resist. Turns out I was able to resist. I had something better to do every day, all the time.
And we'll save this for the topic later on. Let's go ahead and jump to the TF Wiki, not actually not the TF Wiki spot, like Crave Corner, and we'll be back right after this. So this is Crave Corner for, what is it, November
7th? It is November 1st.
But we actually broadcast this on the 2nd. So for November 2nd, 2011. So I'm Brian Kilby, and with me I have Cole Sickler. You are what, community manager, is that it?
That's one of my many titles, yes.
At Crave.com, which is an awesome resource, and I am leaning on heavily during, as I mentioned last week, my move. I've been studying the site, figuring out how I'm going to place everything.
So you must be strategic and ready
strategic
for
maximum return, and but also, of course, maximum value to you, the potential consumer.
Of course.
So how's it going, Cole? Everything good?
It's going well, yeah. We're winding down October. We had a pretty exciting contest and listing bonus happening. We're currently crunching the numbers to figure out who won, so we're going to be announcing that soon. And we're really looking forward to Turkey Month, November. It's a good time.
Oh, yeah. Did you have a good Halloween at Crave?
Oh, we did, yeah, definitely. A lot of fun.
So is Crave one of those places where you can sort of, you know, like dress in your costume at work?
I'm wearing this today at work, so yeah, costumes were totally fine on Halloween.
Yeah, we get a memo that reminds us, no costumes on Halloween.
Oh, that's tragic.
Yeah, I know. That's what happens for working for a Fortune 50 company.
Actually sitting next to me at work.
That's pretty sweet.
It was nice.
Awesome. So, okay, any really cool items pop up this week?
We got a lot of vintage G1s, actually.
Really?
Posted. Yeah, we got some. So I'm looking at a packaged, opened, complete Inferno for $30 with free shipping.
Wow. Wow.
There's a packaged, open, complete Megatron, $100 free shipping.
Sounds like someone's moving and just trying to get rid of the stuff quick because those prices are awesome.
And then, that's the new 2002 New Year special. But there is a G1 commemorative Optimus Prime up there as well. What else we got going on? Yeah, a lot of G1s because we posted the top 20 most wanted products to the blog, which is blog.crave.com.
Awesome.
And a lot of people started posting their G1s totally dominate that top 20 list. So
yeah.
A lot of people started posting.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do to thin out my collection when I move. I'm actually probably going to drop my masterpiece, my Takara masterpiece, Rodimus. I hate to part with it, but the box is huge. It's like the box is as big as I am. It's ridiculous for such a small toy. So
that's cool. That'll be cool.
I've been really, 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 really studying the G.I. Joe section because for the last year I've been like this crazy, frantic G.I. Joe, buying spree. Anything like crazy awesome pop up this week?
Anything crazy awesome on Crave G.I. Joe? If I recall, we got a. Just pulling it up right now.
It's all awesome, really.
I mean, yeah, there's always some cool stuff. We got the most recent posting is a 25th anniversary Snake Eyes, which is my favorite character, so I'm down. The Cobra Rattler, 25th anniversary
Very cool.
Cobra Rattler was put up, which was pretty cool. Someone also posted a lot of tech specs from original G1 toys as well under the parts section.
Oh, man, I have so many tech specs.
Yeah, so if people are looking to complete, there's always those. We got a good number of from the classic first time when they were the three and three quarter inch dudes. We got a lot of vehicles from there. There's the Cobra Stiletto packaged open complete for $25.
So one interesting thing that we just shared actually before the segment, you can actually, I didn't realize this, you can actually edit the catalog. You can submit requests to like add things that, I mean, obviously Crave is a social platform, but that actually goes beyond what I even anticipated. Actually, can you really quickly tell the viewers how that works?
Oh yeah, sure. It's real easy to tell us what we need to add to a catalog. If you find we're missing a product, you just go to the main catalog page of whatever products you're in. If you're in Transformers, G.I. Joe, Stars, etc. So you go to the main page for that catalog, and then there are two tabs at the top: Browse Catalog and Recent Activity. So if you click the Browse Catalog tab, that'll take you to a page that has three rows of five products. And then at the top, above the top right product, there's a button that says Edit Catalog. And that'll take you to a Google form where you can fill out a couple questions, give us the answers, and then we'll update within 48 hours typically.
That's really sweet.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. Anything else, Cole?
So we're working on the banners right now, but the new buyer promotion is continuing through November. So if you still haven't made your first purchase on Crave,
you can
for $5 back. And then also exciting, we've started working on the third-party add-on section for the Transformers catalog.
Yeah, and I'll mention this again just so people know. This isn't like an advertisement or anything. I love Crave. I mean, Rob Springer turned me on to Crave like a year ago, and I think it's like the coolest thing ever. So I'm not saying this to shill. I really think Crave is like the future of selling this stuff and buying this stuff. It's really awesome. So when I tell you
Thanks.
That I really love the site, I'm telling you because I really do. So that way to go, Cole. This is great stuff.
Yeah. Well, I really enjoy working here. It's a lot of fun, and it's a lot of fun to get the fan feedback. So
awesome. Sure. Cool. Well, I guess we will talk to you next week, Cole. Have a good one.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
I am He-Man. Call She-Ra and me at 1-900-909-2233.
We'll journey to distant worlds, explore the universe,
and probably battle Skeletor along the way, huh?
Probably, Orko. There's a new adventure every day. We'll also tell you how to get an action figure or this colorful poster.
Part of your $2.35 two-minute call will go to local science museums.
Get your parents' permission and call 1-900-909-2233.
I have the power!
This is Twitter Theater.
Hey guys, this week's Twitter Theater. If you didn't check it out already, it's at tfvideo.net. Is the beginning of our Thanksgiving celebration for Twitter Theater. And that would be the best of Twitter Theater. In other words, Twitter Theaters I'm thankful for. Came up with that one all by myself. Because I'd like to do something with Thanksgiving. This week's Twitter Theater was the OTFCC 2003 documentary. It was posted sometime last year. Early last year. Mainly because it had footage of the OFTC. Man, that is a mouthful to say. OTFCC 2003 dance party. Which Brian and I attended for a very few minutes. Laughed and left. Essentially, we got there and it was a group of us. It was myself, of course, Brian, Hooper X, and Ant from TFU, Tony Fitz. We got there and saw basically a dance floor completely empty. You can see where I'm pointing. Completely empty. And a bunch of people standing up outside a wall like this. And that was it. And they were playing some inane, not really inane, just sort of weird remix of Metallica's One with Transformers the Movie samples. It's not, it's just kind of weird. It was like, And I remember Ant from TFU, he was very confused and conflicted because he's like, I don't understand. I really like Metallica and I really like Transformers, but I really wish they weren't mixed together. We were just kind of looking around like, what the? I remember at one point, this very large couple started going and headbanging. And I was like, well, okay. It was very odd. And I remember looking over at Brian at one point. He was just like this. Yep. We ended up leaving after we saw it. It was like basically this dance floor was completely empty, but every once in a while someone would run out and be like, yay! And then run back to the audience. And that was the dance party. Apparently, and according to this video, a little bit later, it kind of loosened up. And if you watch the video, you'll see people got more open with their dancing. I think it's since they got liquored up, because there was an open bar. And I think since they got liquored up, they loosened up some. As you see in the video, there's people kind of dancing around a little. And there's one guy does the Booker T spin-a-rooney. I don't know why. I really don't know why he does that. He's like, and people are like, yeah, he's good. He's good. One guy dances for a second and takes off his hat and bows and then runs off back into the crowd. And they're like, hey, this is the kind of the version of the nerd version of the Soul Train line. Yeah, this is the Transformers fans nerd version of the Soul Train line. But instead of a line and people dance down it, there's a giant empty square and people are standing all around it. And someone will nervously run out in the middle, make a fool of himself, and run back off. That pretty much is it. And, but as the video shows, people get liquored up, and the dance floor kind of fills up a little, and people are kind of boogieing, you know, they're like, yay! I think at that time, they're probably playing a CNC Music Factory, interlaced with Transformers sound clips, and they're just like, yeah, this is good! And, my favorite, if you watch the video, there's some, it looks like somebody's mom doing Broken Windmill, which is, you know, traditional goth dancing. You know, the whole, my soul's on fire. I wear all black. I'm so miserable. You know, that stuff. But it's like someone's mom in her jorts and t-shirt poked in at hip level. So she's just like, I saw this on TV. This is how people dance. To music with Transformer samples in it. This is cool. Yeah. I'm tired. Well, I'm very sleepy, and I might get back to bed after this. But that was Twitter Theater this week. We'll see what next week's greatest of Twitter Theater was. If you guys got any suggestions, go ahead and post them on our Facebook page or YouTube page saying, hey, this was my favorite Twitter Theater, and we'll do that one, okay? All right. Well, I'm going to go do some burning windmill dancing in the bathroom. You know, it stinks in here. I'm pooping. Yeah, TMI. All right, back to you guys. Thanks.
Okay, so we are back, and we are going to go to John DeLuna this week because JD is not around with
history.
This week in history.
Take it away, John.
Okay, 1927, long time ago. Guess what? Hyper-paranoid artist Steve Ditko was born on November 2nd, 1927, co-creator of Spider-Man, creator of The Question and more, and he worked on several Transformers coloring books in the 80s when he was in his 60s. Or late 50s. Yeah.
That's cool.
Steve Ditko is like one of the most important people in the history of comics, and he did Transformers coloring books.
Yes. Great. So, hey, Orson Welles was Unicron. Hey,
that's true.
They can talk about it somewhere.
Transformers has a pedigree, that's for certain.
Yes. November 3rd, 1985.
Artists like working.
They like money.
The Transformers episode. They like money. And I'm sure those coloring books paid bukus, right? Buckets. November 3rd, 1984. The Transformers episode, The Ultimate Doom, Part 1, premiered in the United States.
Oh, thank God.
Every time we
bring up a G1 episode, it's been, since I've been back on, it's been one of the ones that's just like cringe-making, like, oh, God, yeah, that's one of the ones that...
You'll be happy to know that Ultimate Doom is kind of partly what Dark of the Moon is based on.
Yeah, I know. As soon as I read some of the plot, I thought of that because of all the like the constant accusation when I say I don't like the movies. They're like, you want it to be more G1! It's like, how could it be any more G1? Like, are you kidding? It's like,
and yet.
To avoid.
And yet.
Well, then so, I say that. That's it.
Those are the only notable things that ever happened in the first week of November in Transformers history.
Awesome. Sure.
Cool.
And the Ultimate Doom was good.
I liked Ultimate Doom.
Ultimate Doom was ultimate.
For G1 Season 2, it's great.
Yeah.
So,
everything's relative.
Okay, so we tabled the discussion earlier on IDW because that's the topic this week, and Amy has like 23 minutes to discuss IDW comics. So let me just start it off. IDW took over the Transformers license in early 05, if memory serves. Prior to IDW, Transformers were handled by Dreamwave Production and the infamous Pat Lee. And of course, before Dreamwave took over the comic, there had been no Transformers comic since the early 90s. So, guys, so IDW... I think overall, and this is my opinion, I think overall IDW has been a great thing for Transformers. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Because you are.
I'd have to agree with you there, Brian, honestly.
I personally like IDW for a couple of reasons. One, they are willing to bring out stuff that no one else will. Like all of the stuff that...
Like MicroMasters? Oh, wait.
Yeah, well... like all of the stuff.
Just destroy your point before you start.
No, like all of the stuff like that Jim Sorensen has worked on. Like,
oh yeah,
like Allspark Almanac is great. I love that. Before that, you know, like, and I hate to say it, was it Antarctic that did the Cybertronian with Doug Glenn? John, does that sound right? And John cannot.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Sorry, when I'm chatting, I'm mute.
Sorry, I think
you don't have to hear my labored breathing.
But
working with the chat is hard. So.
Yeah,
take a sweat.
So yeah, lots of neat little side projects that we would not have otherwise gotten are around today.
As long as it's not a comic, IDW is pretty good.
Well, what about Last Night of the Wreckers? You love that book.
Oh yeah,
I love that. No, see, I love that. Now, but I mean, like, as looked at as a, you know, a part of the body of the whole, that's a small amount.
It's true.
Of
it's only six issues.
Last Night of the Wreckers may be the best Transformers comic that ever came out, and I say that as someone who likes the early G1 stuff, like the Budiansky stuff.
Me too. I think a lot of it comes out to it's like not very good comic books. Wreckers is like a total exception, and it's related. There's All Hail Megatron 15, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is related and is another notable exception. But like those are fantastic, and they like just stand.
You mean Spotlight Cup?
Oh, and Spotlight, yeah.
Yeah,
really, well, Spotlight Cup
goes back to that too. So there's
pretty dark,
There are some people that IDW has had the sense to continue to employ, not and coming up on a more regular basis, but not regular enough before, that are the salt on their turd. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, wow, those parts aren't so bad. It's too bad they're on this. You know? I can't, like, call IDW, like, having done a really good job of Transformers comics because they publish good sideline stuff and because they happen to like stumble upon some real talent.
Why can't they publish like that stuff every month? I mean, certain books.
I mean, I like Bloom County too, but it's not a point in their favor on their Transformers comics.
I mean, certain, you know, it's Marvel is a AAA, you know, publishing company. They hire the best, but Amazing Spider-Man is consistently good month to month because Dan Slott does a great job. It's my favorite comic, hands down. Why can't IDW put, you know, like the same amount of effort or like their best talent on the monthly Transformers book?
Good question. I think honestly it comes down to the consistency of buying of the book is sort of written in stone, and they've really, sadly, I think, you know, it's because they've bottomed out. They could bring a lot more readership in if they were doing a really great job. But what they've done is they've gotten down to the base that is a Transformers buying, comic buying base.
The built-in base.
They buy every single book, no matter what you do. And they even, they sunk past where I normally would have thought that was, past me, where I wouldn't read it for free. And like that, I would have considered myself part of that base. And I just, you know, out of morbid curiosity, I thought I'd flip through one day and discovered that my local comic shop wasn't even buying them anymore.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So I couldn't, at a point, I couldn't have kept up if I wanted.
Now, Amy, you seem to, you agree with me that overall it's a good thing. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think part of I hear what some of you guys are saying, but I also think about, you know, they've also, at least since I have started reading them, they've switched editors at least once a year so far. And it kind of seems like, you know, they need to have a little bit of consistency in that area. I know that we're just barely starting with a new editor now. And everything that I'm hearing, you know, I like what's going on. I like what direction it's going. I know that part of that is because of what's kind of been come before. But at the same time, I don't like what's come before because, like, I haven't been really enjoying the last 2 years of Transformer comics. I've been surviving it.
Yeah. Well, if the new editor knows how to edit comic books, it would be a big bonus. Yeah.
I take it, Ender, you were reading the Dreamwave stuff as it came out, or were you not?
Yeah, I did.
I'm sorry.
I actually used to read
wise, everything wise. I had every cover, every of the two cover thing, and the whole deal.
Yeah, me too.
Wow.
I was that idiot. I was right there. Well, I have three covers.
I used to buy them.
Me too. Well, so, Peter, what are your thoughts?
Well, Dreamwave stuff. I mean, I think I got up to like Energon, and I was like,
That's the thing. That's the thing. Those are the best books that came out.
Oh my god!
Yeah, the Armada comic was really good. Yeah, and then when I got to Energon, I was like, forget it, and I'm done. And then I was like, all right, maybe I'll try the IDW stuff. And then it was like the Simon Furman books, and then going and what's that? Oh, it kept going, and you know, it kept like. it was like the six issues, and then it was another six issues, and it was like another six issues, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, this doesn't really appeal. I'm gonna stop now, and I actually haven't bought a Transformers comic book since.
You know, I would say
they did really good with the spotlights, because I enjoyed almost every spotlight that I read.
Yeah, that was before I quit actually before the spotlights.
The only spotlight stuff I've read has been on my Kindle, because I bought them on Amazon, and that was not a good idea.
Oh.
But, we were talking about the Dreamwave stuff. The Unicron Trilogy stuff was far and away the best stuff. If you were the G1 stuff was just crap. And I think even today, the IDW stuff is better than the stuff
Dreamwave. I felt like it was picking up. I felt too, Dreamwave really was under the burden there of really being the first people to step back in and be like, can we really write something about basically, a cartoon from 1986 and have people give a crap. And, I think it was really kind of jittery to start out with just what their base was. And I think it also contributed to huge problems in their company. I think what really happened to Dreamwave was they started publishing the Transformers. They had two covers for everything, so they sold twice as many books to the base. The base was going to stick around no matter what. But they were dancing around like they were geniuses because they were selling all these books. All of a sudden, they discover, like, wow, people won't buy two covers of the crappy thing we thought up last week. Huh. And they, poured too much money into that.
Oops.
So.
Yeah.
I really felt like that was what happened to them.
And
like, we're great. It's like, no, the Transformers are pretty cool, and you're lucky.
It's not like Marvel and everyone. It's not like they don't do the multiple covers, but those are like chase covers. They don't make you buy two. You luck out in quotes by getting like the rarer of the two covers. It's like IDW and Dreamwave tried to entice the buyer into buying both covers, and they did. When they had four covers, I bought all four.
We're the schmucks who buy all repaints. Hey, if we put out two covers, well, I don't think that, and I think initially they didn't sell any more comics to the stores than they would have if there was one cover. But when fans got there, fans at that point, keep in mind, desperate for any new generation of media.
Definitely.
We were like, another $4? Why not?
Well, people were frothing at the mouth at that stupid Pat Lee poster that was in Wizard magazine. Like, oh, the possibilities, look at that. It's anime-style art. He's like, it's amazing. And then you actually read it, and it was all dull surprise, and it was all crap. But there were still the stalwarts who felt that it was amazing because, of course, they were part of the Pat Lee cult that eventually, I think... I mean, there was a Pat Lee cult. I mean, there are people who felt that, still do, amazingly, that he could do no wrong. And it's mostly because... It's mostly what you would refer to as fanboys, people who sort of don't really process everything as deeply as they might need to, which is, I hate to say, it was most of the Dreamwave buying public. I think that the IDW fans are probably more discerning in the sense that they're less prone to buying crap, which is probably one of the reasons that their books aren't selling like they used to. Too, which I kind of hate to say, but that's...
Well, I think...
There was
good debate about about the quality of the books before the ongoing came out. But I really feel like once they hit the ongoing, it was just like...
I have to say with the ongoing, I'm not really sure that... From the get-go, it's been very controversial, I think. I haven't enjoyed it as much as, say, the stuff that I got earlier. So I'm like, but I'm looking forward to the future.
Well, the last run of movie books were good.
Well, I mean, that's
they were
all.
Relatively
speaking.
I think that might have something more to do with the individuals that were creating it, because they were lifelong fans that have grown up on a lot of the stuff. I mean, they're like people like us.
Well, I'm a lifelong fan, but it doesn't mean that I would make a good writer for the Transformers. I think Transformers tend to be best when someone who isn't passionately involved in them. Sit down and actually,
I would say that the lesson of IDW is that what you were saying is exactly wrong. That the best stuff they have out is by people who have loved it their whole lives.
But that's still anecdotal.
Is by people who came in and were like, hey, I can make this work. And it's like everything they've come up with, every storyline, it's just like, it's like somebody made up a list of things like that would be like bad ideas for the Transformers and were like, hey, I dare ya. It's like, that's like the system they must have had for determining.
But it's still anecdotal. The best fiction that Transformers ever received, like ever, would still be like animated or Beast Wars. And those were not created by people who were fans of the series. They were created by people who were hired to do it.
Well, I beg to differ on that because Derek J. Wyatt is most definitely
Derek J. Wyatt wasn't the writer, though. He was the designer. Marty Eisenberg.
But he was working with it.
Yeah, he was definitely involved. Definitely
he was
involved.
Most definitely involved. I'm sure that definitely he bounces just as many as ideas.
But
as,
I think, but the
Marty
crafting
Eisenberg
of the stories,
did.
The crafting of the stories, and the actual pen to paper was Eisenberg and company.
Yeah, no, that's because Eisenberg knows how to tell good stories.
He can. Yeah. That's the point. You need people who can tell good stories more so than people who are like super invested.
That's true. Well, I'd say a super invested fan who can't tell a good story obviously is not going to be a suitable writer. But I'm just saying, like, something to say that it's better when they're not involved, I think, is like.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is not.
Like, just like percentage of the population of the Earth that's super involved versus that isn't, like. Yeah. You're more likely to have a writer that isn't than is.
No, right.
So,
I mean,
how would you judge that? And I would say if IDW shows us anything in terms of itself, it's the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm not disagreeing with that. I guess what I'm saying is a lot of times as fans, we try to say we want people who are super fans involved in whatever, when it turns out that the people who are typically super fans aren't good writers.
Yeah, and well, that's
so
just
you're talking about like crazy fans then.
Or anybody, yeah. Anybody.
If you bring somebody in who's a super fan just because they're a super fan, that's not going to do anything for you. But yeah. It seems to me that there are enough, you know. This show, you know, came out in the 80s. There are enough fans who are aged enough that you could find someone who at least, and this is what I asked for, knows what the hell they're talking about.
Very true enough
not to do something outright silly and stupid or miss the point of what they're doing. Like, we're going to have Grimlock and he's going to be a pickup truck. No, it's like, I think you missed something. It's like, well, he can't be a dinosaur. And it's sort of like, no. He has to be a dinosaur. That's what you're missing. Like, but he can't. It's like, then you shouldn't work on this because somebody else will understand. There are people out there who do.
That's a great point. It's an age thing. Where Beast Wars had, you know, there weren't people who were like steeped in Transformers who were old enough to like be professional writers who had enough experience to pull it off. So they hired Ben Yee to come in and consult, and that was great, but that was 15 years ago. Now there are people who are fans, who are professionals, who have experience, and who can craft good stories in place to do it. So that's actually a really good point, Ender.
Do you remember when Dreamwave made that, like, there was like a poll where you would sign, you know, before the grand age of like internets being easy, they had like a card in one of the, I forget which book it was, but then you could vote which, if you wanted an RID, like an RID book or a Beast Wars book. And I forget which one we got, but it sucked.
I don't even remember that.
Am I the only one that remembers this?
I just remember all the books sucking except for the first few issues of Armada.
Let me
all I know is at this point they're like talking. They're gonna have like this big. We're gonna continue off the '80s storyline. It was kind of like, didn't they kind of finish that off mostly? We're gonna continue something. I know, you know, this is counterintuitive what we're saying, but couldn't we finish off like the Dreamwave books they never finished?
Yeah.
like the six parters we got four parts of.
Some of that,
or
though,
like,
was
God
stuck
forbid,
in-
G1 Alita 1 could be in some media somewhere.
Yeah.
You know.
Some of that is stuck within, you know, like, you know, legal reasons right now, or they can't release some of that stuff. But, you know, I know a lot of artists and writers and people out there that actually have stuff that they could have released that would have been like, oh, yeah, cool. What do you do, right?
But I guess the point I just want to get across, and I don't know that I really captured it. I don't think, even though I'm not crazy about their ongoing stuff, I think that the service that IDW does for the fans, the things that they will release because they know that the core fans will buy it, I think overall is a good thing for the fandom, even if I have to put up with some books that I don't necessarily like, because realistically, historically, none of the Transformers comics have been good. And even the stuff that people love, even like the old Simon Furman stuff from the UK and a lot of the Furman stuff from the late G1 run, it was all pretty mediocre. And the IDW stuff, for what it is, even if you don't like it, it's still top tier, top shelf as far as G1 comics or Transformers comics go. It's true. I mean, not everything that was ever released is as bad as, say, the Blackthorn books, but for the most part, it's all pretty mediocre.
Yeah, well, I think it's even just part of the problem. It's like, does it have to be? Is that
no,
like
it does not.
It's frustrating in that way because it's like they're like IDW really, they're coasting on the name on the front of their book. And I think they have a genuine belief that there is nothing else there, and they really aren't bothering for the most part. And the reason that when they've hired people who are passionate about it, it's been excellent, is because those people, despite the fact nobody cared, showed up and like bothered to do their jobs.
You know, they cared. They genuinely care, and they made us care about the characters.
Yeah,
the way that we should care about them as well. So,
really genuinely feel like, you know, complaints aside, reception aside, anything but, you know, being removed from the book for bad sales aside, Costa couldn't have cared less about the franchise or what was going on. He just was like, yeah, I got this story idea. I'm just going to go with that. That's fine, right? Everybody, it's all right. And like, it's one of those things just like, it was a feat to get me to leave. I'm like OCD over this. He's like, wow, you have like conquered my psychological condition. Like,
wow.
Good move.
That's what the Unicron trilogy did for me. Energon killed my love, not my love, but Energon killed my fervor for buying stuff for like 3 or 4 years.
I'm glad I skipped all this stuff.
Well, that's, you know, the last like year or so, I have really been much more toned down on all of my Transformers purchasing. It really is just scaled back to just Primes, and I was not paying that much attention. I mean, it was bad. It's like, so there's going to be this awful movie in the theaters, and you're going to keep writing these awful comics, and like, I'm going to sit here and yell about them all day. It's like, or I could just be somewhere else.
That's true. You haven't been online. Every single time I said something to you, you're like, yeah, yeah, whatever.
Well, you don't want to beat yourself. When you complain about something like that, you're beating yourself up.
Yeah.
And you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was like, you know, Andy Schmidt himself, like, writing me an email going, like, why are you reading this? Like, good question.
That's a good question. Like,
you might want to be careful what you ask people. You know?
So, Amy, it looks like it's getting close to time for you. Do you need to head out?
I've probably got 5 minutes, so.
Okay, so let's go ahead and jump to something Ender wanted to talk about. He's been posting stuff to our Facebook fan page regarding the Game Informer coverage of Fall of Cybertron. And I'm really interested in what your thoughts are on this, Ender.
Well, it's killer because it's like, I think even last week, I was defending the spread of coverage of this game just because the game looks fantastic. None of this is against the game or the developers. There's nothing in the coverage that shows any kind of problem with the game. But the last game, I think, really did suffer from the fact that the perception was it had just been talked to death. And I swear, I think there are people who like are big Transformers fans who like were suffered under that like deluge of information and like didn't touch the thing out of like bitterness over it. By the time it came out, the only buzz there was about it was like, God, I wish they'd shut up about it. And I defended it, and I was defending this one on the basis of saying, like, hey, that hasn't really happened yet. You know, like, this game's just coming out. They're just, you know, putting some stuff out. And then they put this timeline up. And it was just, like, one step too far. Now, it's because they were trying to, like, have something, like, every couple of days or every day for all of October because they were, like, exclusive coverage month. But there's only so much to cover right now. And what they have, even the good stuff, could have been spread out over months to really generate decent buzz for the game without, like, creating, like, active derision in the fan base. And which is, you know, what happened to the last one. I mean, people, you know, the jokes about, like, the game will be using electricity. You know, like getting there and this timeline. All right. I'm sure this is like some, you know, Game Informer, not you know, schmuck not knowing anything about the Transformers, go like, well, where does this fall in the Transformers timeline? It's like, you mean the one that doesn't exist? And like for this particular, you know, series, there's only two entries. It's like, yeah, where does it fall into that? And this is how the timeline pretty much ends up reading. It's like, well, there was a time before the first game. There was the first game. This will be the second game. And then perceivably, there will be a time after the second game. Like, and then they put a big two-page graphic up with like Cybertron and Earth and a big spiraling thing and graphics with a timeline with four entries.
Yeah.
The past, yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
I'm actually kind of surprised by that.
Doing?
There's so much stuff going on that they could have done that. They could have put more in there, like Prime. They could have tied it in like that, right?
Well, you know, but they couldn't, though, because actually, one of the nice things that came out of the coverage was Aaron Archer seems to have finally come around and realized that, like, oh, wait, I can't actually unify all the continuities because that's stupid. And that's what the timeline question was. It's like, that's stupid. That's the wrong question. But they went with it, and they made the thing up anyway because they had to fill all this space. And it went from, like, an exclusive coverage month into, like, a death march. You know, it's just gotten unbearable, just dumber and dumber stuff. And, like, then the even worse, valid stuff that they're releasing late in the thing, it's like, actually, that's kind of interesting, but it's like
we won't get to see it for a year.
Watch after you watch the movie. It's like totally spoiled out the wazoo. And like, I just don't understand what the logic is here. Like, and you know, I guess they were having their month of it, so now they're going to stop. But you know, I didn't see that that was going on. I was wondering, like, how long are you going to continue this? This is a game of which the 10th anniversary of its release is 11 years away.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, that's a fact you should note. You know, you want to have a big month for this game? I promise, you know, as opposed to any Aztec calendar problems, there will be an October next year.
It's you know? It's an issue that's not just with Game Informer, though. It's sort of systemic across all of gaming media. There was this really, back in, I can't remember if it was EGM, or if it was Next Generation, I think it was EGM, that had a fighting game on it, and it asked if it was the greatest fighting game ever. The fighting game never came out. It never got more than 20% finished.
Oh, no.
And it's one of these things that you make deals with the company to get coverage, or exclusive coverage, in the hopes that, you know, you'll sell magazines. And you ran a gaming store, you sold gaming magazines, you saw this play out. But it's annoying, and it's not just something that's a pain with it's a pain with a lot of things.
Watch the gaming magazines tanking is more like what it was.
Well, there's that too.
This is a fan base that's so like anti-spoiler. I mean, like, we hold spoilers in roughly like the same regard as malaria, and I think we probably go like to greater extremes to avoid spoilers than malaria.
So in defense of like Game Informer, they do this every month, more or less, with any other game that doesn't come out until like a year later, right?
See, that's not a defense, in my opinion.
Well, No,
we do this retarded thing all the time. Like, you know, like maybe they should stop.
This is the kind of stuff that happens often. It's just that.
I think there's no reason they couldn't have
other games.
All of these things the month before the game comes out. And
yeah,
you know,
but unlike other games, a lot of people.
You know, different. It's just silly. This is just silly. That timeline thing was just silly. And, like, suddenly they made true. Like, I feel, like, more strongly about it because I was sitting here defending them. You know, and then there's, like, you know. The game, I mean, like, the most recent thing, it was like, yeah, so our game is going to have cutscenes, and we tried to make them good.
I don't think it was for us, though. I don't think it was for the diehard Transformers fan. It's for people who are like, either.
Yeah, diehard Transformers fans don't think there's a unified continuity.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. So they're like, oh, cool.
They try to talk about it like they know what they're talking about, even. And like, the fact that they do this all the time just means they're doing something else stupid the rest of the time. And I just, I mean, I think this is like a bad strategy to like, I just can't understand what's appealing about, you know, turning coverage into smothering. You know, I don't feel like this game's
saying
being
it's awesome covered. And making I feel like us this think it's awesome
stuffed
it's not
into
real.
A pillow and held over my face.
Well, it's actually not far from that, Ender, because there's kind of like a mob mentality around it. It's kind of like gangsterism, where there's, you know, people being people are being forced into things that they may or may not want to do because of leverage, either internal or external factors are causing it. And this time, I think it's external because coverage for War for Cybertron is huge for Game Informer. They want to get that again, and they want to have some sort of relationship when this game comes out because, of course, Game Informer is owned lock, stock, and barrel by GameStop.
That coverage was bad for War for Cybertron. Yeah. Because I think what it came out to be, because you know, the buzz that went around the game, especially in the fandom, and that's where their buzz was being generated from, was, oh yeah, that game they overhyped? That's all anybody was talking about anymore. They had talked about it so much that all anyone was talking about was how much they were talking about it. And like a year before the game comes out, it's like Fall of Cybertron month. And it's just like, what? What? It's yeah. Like, you know.
As a new person myself, just seeing this, I mean, because I didn't watch a lot of the War for Cybertron stuff coming out, but I heard enough of it that I went out and bought an Xbox specifically so I could play this game. And I played it like almost, you know, I've played it a lot since. I still play it. What can I say? But like, I'm kind of along on the same board as like, I'm seeing, okay, you said that you announced it's coming out. You said it won't be out for a year. And we've spent a whole month talking about something that won't be here till next year. And I just don't understand the logic of why they wouldn't do that 6 months before it actually comes out and start hyping it then rather than a whole year before. Because I'm like, I'd like to play the game now. I don't want to play it in a year. I want to play it now.
Right now, it's still in development, right? So they want to hype the game.
And I get that.
Starting and what they're looking for. And then in 3 or 4 months, you're probably going to be able to play. Like, we're probably going to, you know, the journalists are going to be invited to these press things where they get to play the game, the single player, and you get to ask questions. And then 3 months after that, you get to ask.
More like a month or two before. You know, like,
well, no, you were able to play the single player, and then you went back and played the multiplayer. And then
You did that all at once.
You did it all at once? Well, then they're going to be a little better at it, because they didn't know that it was going to be this. Because when War for Cybertron came out, Game Informer had this little blurb, like one page, that said it'll be out in like 6 months. So we got more information about the game prior to.
They had a big spread on it. They had a second big spread on it. I don't know if it was. It wasn't the cover.
It wasn't as big as.
It was not two pages. It was like a page.
Is that because when a game is in early development, you can build buzz for it, but if it's rough, you can't judge it because it's not finished. Later on, toward the point when it's close to being released, if it's not good, that can generate negative buzz.
I don't think this has anything to do with the creation of gaming. I think this has to do with Game Informer. I think the fact that they do this every month, this is somebody's online strategy for the magazine that's prevailing over good sense.
That makes sense too.
This drove a lot of traffic. People were reading it, right? And that's all that matters.
Oh yeah, I've read it. I haven't been able to keep up as much with it, but
I think it's sort of like it's crappy journalism. It's bad for the game. Yeah. You know, if they drop that out every couple of weeks, I think more people would have come to look at it because they're, you know, I think how many people skipped over it going like, oh God, more crap about that.
But that news will still be there six months later.
We're getting to the point where we're sick of hearing about it a year before it comes out.
Oh, man, it's going to be a great year.
That's really dumb.
I think it's fine. I mean, they did a cover story for it, and they expanded on the stuff.
That's just it. The filler, though, that creates this negative feeling about it.
I mean, it's kind of like reading. It's kind of like watching like a 24-hour news channel, right? They talk about the craziest stuff over and over and over again.
The way they're talking about it, though, is in a more standard sense, is what we would have heard about a game like right before it came out. And I think it really is just like they're trying to do something new, but really, I think it's really counterproductive. And I think they shouldn't be doing that. I think it's bad.
Yeah. I, I think Activision and Game Informer know exactly what they're doing. And
maybe
they know exactly what they're doing.
You live on where just because someone got the job, they have any idea what they're doing.
No, I'm talking about marketing purposes. I'm not talking about like
I get their marketing too.
Dartboard.
It's all marketing. It's all marketing.
I get the reason why they're marketing it. The only thing is I just when I see it, I'm like, okay, I'm really glad they're putting stuff out and they're creating it, but I'm like, how much can they really reveal this early in the game, for one? And for two, aren't they going to pace themselves so that we have like more to see for the next 9 months out of the year?
The answer to that question is no.
They still haven't talked anything.
Live in people's interest, and what they're doing instead is like, what do they think? It's like trying to fatten us up for the winter and hope we hibernate. I mean, what's
some of these
happen?
People weren't watching what happened with the drift thing, right?
They haven't said anything about the multiplayer yet.
Yeah,
other than the fact that there is
all will be revealed.
They're going to keep
next month be multiplayer month.
Yeah.
I said, they're going to continue to pace themselves. Activision and Game Informer know exactly what they're doing. They're doing stuff that, you know, hardcore diehard fans who go to Transformers websites every day are going to be like, this is dumb. This is really crap. Four descriptions on a timeline, this is stupid. But people who are like, oh, I did not know that, Exodus and, Exiles or whatever is a new timeline, they're going to learn about it.
That's
people
true.
People who read Game Informer aren't diehard fans.
Too much stuff about a game they're not that interested in and go, why are they talking about this? It's not coming out for
you. Ignore it. They can ignore that. If they don't care,
So you're telling me they do this for something every month, all right? This is how successful that's been with me on stuff that I'm not interested in. I didn't even notice they were doing it.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's good for the other people who aren't interested, but I'm telling you, as someone who wasn't interested in those other things, it wasn't doing jack.
But if somebody was interested in the first Transformers game...
So now that Ender's face is as red as the Coke that he just drank from, let's go ahead and wrap up the discussion.
Yeah.
And we can actually talk about video games coming up next on New Soundwave. Guys, thank you very much. Ender, thank you for your passion. We are glad you're back. So we'll be back next week with Radio Free Cybertron. If you're watching live, stay tuned for New Soundwave.
It's not coming out for a...
This has been Radio Free Cybertron. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/tfradio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.